Hi, everyone. Welcome to July and the first in our three-part series on the folk tale of the Baba Yaga and Vasilisa. I hinted that this series was coming. Last podcast, if you remember, was about the nine stages of effectively navigating a quantum leap. And I hope you've had an opportunity to listen to that and also to Linka Latanska's YouTube that inspired that whole episode, because it's really her work. I mean, it belongs to all of us, but she articulates it so clearly, so beautifully. And I hope you've had an opportunity to listen to her go through that material herself, because she's has such a lovely affect. You can tell that it's the real deal for her. And I've said it many times, but I'm really particular about who I share with you, and I don't agree with anybody all the time, and I don't want you to agree with me all the time, but I try to point out folks that I'm feeling really resonant with, because I think there's something there. And, you know, if two things guide this series that I'm going to be exploring with you in July on the Baba Yaga, one is we are really entering into the domain of the deep feminine. And Linka Latanska's work is so rich in pointing out that important source for actually navigating in an effective way, stepping into a fuller life. Like, what actually is driving that? What actually is the source of that? So we're going to be talking a lot about the play of the masculine and the feminine, and how to perhaps newly see that duality. And again, this is above and beyond gender. These are just, you know, the dual forces within all of our psyches. So that is one thing I want you to take away, is just this really, you know, I guess it's my dedication to the deep feminine right now, because I'm feeling it so strongly in my life. And prepping this material has been so rewarding for me already. So I trust that that will be conveyed through these three episodes in July. And the second thing I want to note is that ultimately there is a part of the journey that nobody can tell you about, that you will experience with your God completely on your own. And I am so sure of that at this point. You know, we look for help and guidance. And for those who maybe have navigated a pace or two ahead of us, and that's so helpful, and I'm so deeply grateful. And I think of the people who I trust, you know, their message, Linka Latanska's work, Eckhart Tolle's work, Vadim Zeeland's work, Neville Goddard's work, Joseph Rodriguez's work, Marianne Woodman's work, the wisdom of folk and fairy tales, because they're so part of the collective, and speaking the ancient wisdoms to all of us, just like a dream does. So these sources I trust, but ultimately, there will come a point in your journey where it's just you and your God, which is you, which is truly you. And that has been both challenging and thrilling to realize that, because you really have to start metabolizing the I am space in a most profound way to stand in that truth. So that's sort of the 30,000 foot perspective of the next three episodes. I'm going to go into the story today, and I actually have kind of a happy mix of several things we're doing today to sort of set the stage. I think it will be interesting and fun. So we're going to touch on some information I discovered through Linka Latanska's work of another really helpful consciousness writer, by the name of Peter Sage. I'll get to that here in just a minute, but we're going to talk about levels of consciousness, and I have a funny story to share with you, and then we'll move actually into the meat of the myth itself of the Baba Yaga. The second episode then will be working through Clarissa Pinkola Estes's perspectives on this folktale, because she also has such profound and rich and evocative work surrounding the mythological life. And she is also somebody who I trust so very much with the soul and with the feminine and with her perspectives on what rich human stories we can be living. So that will be the second one. And then the third one that we talk about, I'm going to focus on a particular aspect of this amazing story of the Baba Yaga and Vasilisa. And that's, you'll see soon, if you're not familiar with the story, the magic hands. And we will end with that, because that's sort of hearkening back to what I just said about there's a certain part of your journey that is just going to be completely unique to you. So that's where I want to begin today. I hope you're doing well. The moon is really waning down right now, and I'm going to pivot now. You know, I've shared a lot of my own poetry with you, and I'm going to be bringing other poets in. Now, we'll continue to honor the moon and her phases and her cycles, but there's so much excellent poetry that I think I'm going to start pivoting a bit to that. And so I have two very short but powerful selections from Nayira Wahid's work, her volume Salt. She is a phenomenal poet. Oh my God, she's so amazing. I highly recommend her volume Salt, and I'm sure there are others. She has an extraordinary gift with language, just like Clarissa Pinkola Estes does. I mean, they're differently colored, but such command and tenderness with their words, and, you know, just the unexpected ways they put language together. It's just so inspired, so of the depth of life. But I chose these sort of in a winding down part of the moon. The moon will be new again around Monday. So today is the 13th of July, and Monday, the 17th, somewhere in there, it will be new again, which means that the moon will be full around August 1st. And when a moon is full on the 1st, that's going to be a blue moon month. So we'll get another full moon at the end of August. So just something to anticipate enjoying coming up for the fullness of summer is really when the harvest is beginning. There will be a blue moon month, which is a lovely thought. So with that, let me share. The rain in this room is low and thick, and undressing my heart through the air. Intimacy. I'll just read that again. The rain in this room is low and thick, and undressing my heart through the air. Intimacy. And then this other one is one line. Well, actually two. Stay soft. It looks beautiful on you. Stay soft. It looks beautiful on you. There's so much feeling, in my estimation, in her work, in just simple phrases, seemingly simple phrases. So I hope you enjoy that and check out her work. We'll be returning to her work. And I think that's one theme also that I'm really enjoying with this folktale of the Baba Yaga. She is a fierce Russian character. There's so much wildness about her. But also, we're just entering that deep mystery of the divine feminine. And there's so many aspects to that. There's so many faces of the divine feminine. And I really feel those coming alive in me in a new way. You know, 100 years ago when I taught high school English, you know, early on in my life, I wore a silver necklace with sort of this little capsule that I could roll up a little scroll inside and tuck in and close it. And I wore this at the time because I was very much captivated by the idea of the goddess, of a feminine divine, but I was just dipping my toe in that water. And I wore this necklace often when I taught, and the kids would often comment, like, what's in that? You know, it was interesting. And I had written on that scroll, and I just found it in a drawer here just the other day and held it, and I just thought, wow, I really started something then, because I had written, may the goddess authenticate every aspect of my life. And here I am, you know, 25, 27 years later, really in the fullness of that work. Not that that work will ever end. And that's the beauty about having the divine dimension come into your life. It's not a religious thing. It's not a be good thing. It's just this lush fullness that will never be satiated. It's the one thing that will never be satiated in a healthy way. We seek externally for things sometimes when we're lost and going through addiction cycles or whatever to try to satiate that hunger. And the beautiful thing is, when you embrace the place you're actually supposed to be looking, which is your interiority, you don't have to reach the end ever. It's always going to be revealing something more beautiful, more surprising, more lighthearted, more humorous, more loving, more powerful than before. And so just knowing that I had sort of launched that intention as a young woman, and I'm feeling the fullness of that gathering around me now. Again, an ongoing journey, but, you know, I read the Baba Yaga then. And I will say, I think we go to her hut to meet her and to receive fire at different points in our lives. And there are different kinds of fire. And that will, you know, lead me right into these four kinds of consciousness that I want to share with you from Peter Sage's work. And I've met her before, but I'm meeting her again now, and it's a whole different kind of fire. I do know that. And I am deeply honored for this facet of the divine feminine. And she feels so fecund and of the wild and of the earth to me. And I just can't help but think we're doing so much for the earth when we are in communion with her. And she is wealth. Oh my God. Like, I have had that incredible word, wealth, just traveling with me as I move through this material. And there's infinite wealth within each of us. But knowing also, because she is more of an earthy goddess, that she is an indication of, yes, you will also have the external versions of that as well. You know, she's in our interiority, but because she's so tied to the earth and the mud and the wild, she is a wild woman. She is a wild witch. There's so much joy, even though she is fierce and demanding, and we're going to get into that. But there's so much prosperity that is the natural consequence of meeting her. And I'm very excited for that. And I feel it gathering all around me. Prosperity of relationship, prosperity in terms of my business thriving, prosperity in terms of my own vitality as a woman. You know, when you meet a woman whose goddesses are alive in her, she is infinitely alluring, but in a way that's not sort of courting the gaze of others for her own elevation. It's natural, it's inspiring, and it's so seductive in the most celebratory way. And I love that. And it's not about staking claim to something that doesn't belong to you, but there is a joy and a vivaciousness that is indescribable. And to know that we have all shades and bounties of those goddesses within us, that's such a vast and important connection to foster, in my opinion. It's bringing so much of my life into an experience of being fully alive. So that is my wish for all of us. But before we dive in, you know, to this lush material, there's also the body, and I'm saying that B-A-W-D-Y, sort of raucous experience of humanity and of the divine, that this just made me laugh out loud this morning. And I have to share it with you because all of the effort we have given to disciplining our minds in terms of transurfing material or, you know, stillness practice, all of the above, engagement with, you know, quantum leaping, etc. It just makes examples that I'm about to share with you so bloody obvious. And we've all been this person, and I know that. And it's just hilarious to me. This was in the national news today. This is from Page Six on July 12th. So I guess actually yesterday, because I think today's the 13th. Yeah. So but this just cracks me up. Apparently this happened last night. And this is in no way a political statement. You'll hear politics happening. I keep this podcast apolitical for obvious reasons, because basically everything is a pendulum, right? And, you know, believe how is appropriate for you. But this is just such a hilarious example. I'm going to just read it straight from Page Six, of a pendulum in action. And I wanted to bring some humor to all this rich material that we're also exploring today. So here we go. The title, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Press Dinner Explodes in War of Words and Farting. Camelot it ain't. Page Six regrets to report that a press dinner to boost Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s presidential campaign descended into a foul bout of screaming and polemic farting Tuesday night. The White House hopeful attended the affair at Tony's on the Upper East Side, no doubt hoping to impress on the ladies and gentlemen of the Fourth Estate his worthiness to sit at the very same Oval Office desk once occupied by his late uncle. But a shouting match over climate change broke out between two boisterous old men, sending the evening down an extremely unfortunate path. The gaseous exchange, to which Page Six bore reluctant witness, began after a guest asked Kennedy, founder of the ecological organization Waterkeeper Alliance, about the environment. And it seemed that the mere inquiry was enough to set off apparently drunk gossip columnist turned flack Doug Deckard, the host of the event, who became enraged and screamed at the top of his lungs, "The climate hoax!" Meanwhile, octogenarian art critic Anthony Hayden Guest, who appeared to have been sleeping happily for most of the dinner, was roused by the abrupt rumpus. He suddenly opened his eyes and denounced his longtime pal Deckard, calling him a miserable blob. "Shut up," implored Hayden Guest. Hayden Guest tells us he was not asleep. "I was just thinking," he told us, and he says he is the one who asked the question about the environment. Deckard continued to scream wildly about the climate change scam while Hayden Guest peppered him with verbal volleys from across the table, calling him variously fucking insane and insignificant. Here, it seems, Deckard sensed the need for a new rhetorical tack and let rip a loud, prolonged fart while yelling as if to underscore his point. "I'm farting!" Oh my God. The room, which included a handful of journalists, as well as Kennedy's campaign manager, former Representative Dennis Kucinich, was stunned, seemingly unsure about whether Deckard was farting at Hayden Guest personally or at the very notion of global warming. Regrettably, we may assure readers that there was no room for doubt that the climate changed in the immediate environs of the dinner table. The candidate maintained a steady composure in the face of the crisis. Former Page Six reporter Flo Anthony attempted to change the subject, telling Kennedy how much she admired his father, the tragic Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy. Sadly and somewhat inexplicably, another guest brought things back to climate change, leading to another round of yelling. We're told Deckard and Hayden Guest have known each other for 3 decades. When asked to comment about his outburst the next day, Deckard told us, "I apologize for using my flatulence as a medium of public commentary in your presence." He also asked us to refer to him either as a gallivanting boulevardier or a beer-fueled sex rocket. Oh my God. But the beer-fueled sex rocket, who picked up the tab for the evening as its host, was unapologetic about his views, telling us that he has zero tolerance for the climate hoax, scam nonsense in any venue that I am personally funding. He has had a colorful history of sparring, sometimes rather literally, with the press and more specifically with Page Six reporters. Brit Hayden Guest, who has written for Rolling Stone, Vanity Fair, and penned books like Studio 54, Disco and the Culture of the Night, tells us, "I've known Doug many years. We have had spats before about this and that. We are not quite the same politically, but that doesn't affect relationships in the UK. But I thought this was pretty ridiculous." He continued, "Doug said it was a hoax and a scam. A scam for whom? Who is benefiting? That's not a political thing, it's a human existence thing." Hayden Guest says fighting in public is very unusual for him, but when it is as preposterous and as life or death issue with the planet, to treat it as zany political thing is foolish. During the verbal battle, Hayden Guest had told Deckard, "I am done with you." By the next day, though, the stink seemed to have dissipated. "I didn't mean it," Hayden Guest said. "I'm sure we will talk again." But I just had to bring that up into the space of what we explore here, just because it's such a hilarious example of a pendulum. You know, the charged atmosphere around a really heated subject, and then the politics involved and all the rest of it. But we can make such mockeries of ourselves so quickly. So I think it's reason to keep on keeping on with what we're doing. And I know I've affectionately, again, maybe inartfully, but affectionately referred to kind of my 3 camps of consciousness as plank on head, meaning the really dense consciousness that we all move through. And then the certified life coach space, where it's really all about psychology and, you know, the scholarly approach and, you know, kind of our isms and our philosophies. And we really grow in beautiful ways during that time. But it's not the ultimate, and it's good not to get stuck there. And then we enter into the I am space, which is increasingly what this podcast is becoming about. It's mystical, it's intangible, but so vital. So vital. And it belongs to all of us, whereas that certified life coach space can be a little elitist at times. Again, we all move through all of these, but Lenka Latanska introduced me because I'm reading one of her volumes on energetic business practices, which is excellent, Energetic Selling and Marketing. I highly recommend that volume of hers. But she credits the author Peter Sage, author of The Inside Track, as developing a model of consciousness that he calls the four levels of consciousness. And I had never heard this. And I think it really tracks well with kind of how I had and have spoken about them. But this is really well done. And it's really captured my imagination this last, 3 weeks since I spoke to you. And it's so helpful to think of it. And when you see things going on in the public square or in your own family or whatever, it's pretty easy to see where folks are. And we're not all in one or the other 100% of the time. But, you're probably at home in one of these quite often. And I would argue that when moving among these levels of consciousness is when we tend to take another trip to see the Baba Yaga for another kind of fire. So this is Peter Sage's work. And this first one he calls the to me consciousness. This is victim mode. So in other words, if we are honest with ourselves, each and every one of us has spent time in to me consciousness. And we can easily fall back into it when things don't go as we wish them to. It is all too easy to blame something or someone else for the lack of our results. Here are several examples of what we might say to ourselves when we fall into this level of consciousness. So actually, this is Lenka Latanska, talking about this. So I'm giving both of them credit for this passage here. I would grow my business if it wasn't for the fact that my family needs me more. Right now, my sales flop because people aren't buying around Christmas time. I would invest in my growth, but first I need to wait for a few more sales. I cannot be as successful and fulfilled as I want to be because I was born in the wrong country, to the wrong parents at the wrong time. Or you just don't understand. When we are in to-me consciousness, we let life happen to us and react to its happenings. We let our circumstances dictate what we can and cannot do. We feel limited. We feel things are out of our control and that when we don't succeed, to-me consciousness offers us a quick explanation. It must be the fault of something or someone outside of ourselves. Okay, so that is really clear. And I think that lines up really well with plank on head. Like it takes that some time to think, oh, maybe I have a piece in this. Maybe I have some agency to discover in this, but there's a lot of the poor me stories happening in that. When people are talking about other people and drama, you can rest assured they are in to me consciousness. The second one is by me consciousness. I think this is when we start moving into that certified life coach space, as I call it. This is a state of consciousness where we take absolute control for our results and become a make it happen person. We no longer wait, hope, pray, and blame. We make things happen. This is what the entire personal development field is based on. Set challenging goals. Cultivate your determination. Never give up. You can do it. This is also the level of consciousness where the vast majority of high achievers in business reside. Think about it. Achiever equals by me consciousness. There is no doubt that those people who are willing to roll up their sleeves and adopt by me consciousness are rewarded for it. It is infinitely more powerful to take responsibility for our results than to wait for luck, better circumstances, or someone to help us along the way. But operating through this level of awareness has also got its price. It is exhausting. We know that all the responsibility lies on our shoulders. There is no knight in shining armor out there who can save us. We have got to prove we can do this. We have got to develop immaculate work ethic and let our determination take us through the often many obstacles to our greatest success. It's all about the hard work, the work, the work, the work, the work ethic. Now, this is an elevation of victim consciousness that's clearly a step up. But I see so many people, this has been really challenging for me in the past. You can see people here having external success. And, you know, I'm developing my business in another space and learning what that looks like. And it can appear as though those in by me consciousness, which I was basically raised with, you know, like you have to work really hard. And I did always. So that wasn't a new consciousness to me. And I worked really hard at sort of conventional jobs early on in my life. But when I started to become an entrepreneur and rethought some things and was moving into a different consciousness, it would often appear as though the people who were still in by me consciousness were more successful externally. And yet what happens is you can't go backwards through a door you've already been through. And those strategies didn't work for me anymore. And that is a very sobering moment and exhilarating moment at the same time, because you are forced to find another paradigm. And yet, you know, you have to, you know, work with your ego on that and be like, well, you know, I don't know what this looks like yet, but, you know, there's something else than just running myself ragged and putting in these stupid hours in the week that nobody can have a quality of life around. So I thought that was really excellent. It's a great movement up from victim. But just like Lenka and Peter Sage say here, this is where the whole self-development movement is. You know, there are a few sort of coach people that are at the very edge of this, like moving into the consciousness above this one, that I think have things to offer. But again, that's where I'm really selective. Because if you're working from a model that there's something to fix about you, you inherently have to have a problem, and that's you. And so this runs its course for a while because it's a new way of thinking moving beyond that. So that takes us to our third one, which is through me consciousness. This is the state known as flow, okay? We enter through me consciousness when we are in complete harmony with what we are aiming for. Positive things simply happen. People show up in the right place at the right time. They call us before we pick up the phone to call them. They open doors before we put our hand on the handle. Everything seems to be effortless, fast, and easy. Of course, each and every one of us has found ourselves at some point in the state of flow, and we love it when it happens. Flow makes our work life a lot easier and more enjoyable. But imagine for a moment, what would it be like if this was your default way of filtering your reality? What if being in flow was your norm? You wouldn't only get what you aim for with much greater ease, you would flow with the river of life, which will take you to the most magical places. Of course, there would be some twists and turns along the way, but the destination would be guaranteed. Adopting through me consciousness can be a way of activating your highest potential, creating extraordinary growth, and thriving in every sphere of your life. The only problem is that most of us end up in through me consciousness accidentally. Yes, that is so true. We don't know how to make it our norm. So we end up back in by me consciousness, pushing our way forward until the next lucky break happens. The truth is, it is possible to consciously evolve flow in our personal and professional lives. However, the way to do that seems counterintuitive to our logical brains. This is Lenka Latonska speaking. We have to give up the need for control and replace it with trust. We have to embrace uncertainty a little more. If that alarms your logical mind, be assured that by the time you have read this, you will find playing with the field of uncertainty exhilarating. So then we move into as me consciousness. As me consciousness. So this is definitely the I am space. Guess what? There is yet another level which is even more, infinitely more powerful than the through me consciousness way of living and running your life. The as me consciousness is when you lean into this level of perceiving your reality and you no longer make things happen. You no longer co-create with the universe because you know with every fiber of your being that you are the universe. You let go of the illusion of separateness and belief that you are separate from anything or anyone else. This is the state of oneness with all there is. You know that every person, thing, and experience in your rich universe is a mirror image of you. It is what you are choosing. You started it all, you created it all, and you are the one who is experiencing it through the infinite creations of yours, loving every minute of it. And you know that if you don't love an experience, you can choose something different. Exactly as easily as that, you will understand that you never received anything. You only gave it to yourself. And you can give yourself whatever you wish at any time. For many people, reading this may sound like an ultimate blasphemy. How dare I think I can be that powerful? The idea of accepting your infinitely powerful nature can be unfathomable or scary at first. And yet, what you find out is that the more you lean into this way of being, the more loving you become to everything and everyone in your life. And this is so true because you can't enter the as-me consciousness with emotional chaos. So those disciplines of transurfing, where you're not reacting, where you're opening the heart, where you're listening to the soul's leading, you're just continually becoming more of actually who you really are. But that is the safeguard, if you will, for not being a jerk, right? And to have this increased power at your disposal. It's a subtraction game, as Neville Goddard says, meaning you can have anything you want in the infinite field of possibilities, but it's a subtraction game of removing the layers and the filters and the reactions and the perception gaps that are impeding you experiencing all of that right now. And this is where, in this space, so much of the mystery is happening, because there are very valid conversations around, I can't manipulate people, or I can't, you know, infringe on others' free will. These are some of the topics we'll be covering when we're talking about the magical hands in this folktale, because these are important things to address. And I can address it to a point, but above and beyond that, this is sort of the mystery that must be honored. And the Baba Yaga folktale is really fierce about that, that there are some questions you just don't ask, because it's between you and your God, you and your goddess, you and yourself, your divine self. And, you know, I think it's well-intended when we wrestle with those questions ourselves, because we're trying to be moral people and not invite backlash on ourselves for interfering. But yet, as you increasingly go into the state of I am one with everything, you are not separate from anything, and everything is affecting everything. And your neighbor, your partner, your child is a face of you. And that's why we're having subjective experiences all the time. So it gets deeply mystical here. And I guess just broadly speaking, the safeguards built into, you have to be so emotionally centered and so solid and so loving as you continue to evolve from through me to as me consciousness. But definitely this way of choosing a life, not co-creating anymore, choosing a life, because all of this is happening internally. That infinite field is within us. All of your customers, your beautiful marriage, your loving relationship with your children, your perfect health. It's all inside of you right now in its fullness. And the as-me consciousness allows you to select and align as opposed to doing the hard work bit and all the rest of it. So I just found that so infinitely, infinitely helpful. Definitely, you know, read more on that if this is speaking to you, because that has really helped me. I've shared it with my kids, my folks, and it's just really helpful. And I'll find myself sort of bouncing around between through me and to as me, you know, and reminding myself of the qualities that the personality is trying to, you know, sort of prop itself up with. My ego, for instance, might want to kick into even by me consciousness. Like if I'm faced with some uncertainty, I might have an old habit of, okay, I better go out and make this happen. And to realize that I'm sliding back into by me consciousness, you know, it's going to happen because of my work ethic and my effort. That reminds me really quickly to course correct and surrender to flow state. And then also claim my agency as the divine who is just simply choosing and aligning. Now, again, like we talked about last time with the alchemical points, there will certainly be moments of challenge where you have to hold steady when the external appears to be the exact opposite of what you have chosen that you would like to experience. And I told you from my heart last time that I'm in the midst of several alchemical points, and I still am. You know, June and July have been extraordinarily challenging and exhilarating. I feel like I'm moving from the through me to the as me consciousness in a very experiential way, which is the only way we will remember that. You know, it's the only way to really make it our own. And all of this material is assisting me for certain, including the Baba Yaga material. It's lessening. I do feel that. I do feel arrival, gathering in terms of the things I'm wanting to experience and have chosen for myself. Those desires of the heart, which I'm reminding us all are the divine's desires to experience through the form of you. So thankfully, I'm not in the place that I even was when we last checked in, because it's taken a singular focus for sure. And it will become easier each time that I align with a new dream. But I find all of this extraordinarily helpful and hopeful, because there's so much power that is at our disposal because it's within us. But it reveals itself as we continue to become more loving and more centered and non-reactionary. Not like the politicians having their throwdown last night. Or I guess not politicians, but the people in attendance. So anyway, with that, I want to dive right into, I'm just going to read now the story of the Baba Yaga and Vasilisa. And we're just going to enter that space and remember from a depth psychological perspective, just like with the dream life, every character that we encounter in this story is an aspect of your own psyche, is an aspect of my own psyche. So these are all figures that belong to all of us. We all have a Baba Yaga. We all have a Vasilisa. We all have the wicked stepsisters, et cetera, et cetera. So these all belong to the collective humanity. So it's not just like, oh, I don't have this figure. We all have all of them. And it's important to have dialogue and resonance with these figures because they have so much to teach and share with us. So I'm just going to conclude today, because of this sort of long setup I've done, by just reading the story. And I want you just to allow the story to wash over you and enter it like you would a dream. And the psyche loves the language of story and the symbols. And if your mind wanders, that's fine. It'll come back round. Just let this be a story to soothe and to initiate where it wants to with you, because certain things are going to leap out for you in the story that won't for another person listening to this. You know, they might be drawn to something else, and that's because that's where you are in your consciousness and in how you are integrating. So that's great. So I'm just going to read and enjoy. I'm reading Marie-Louise von Franz's version that she shares in her text, Shadow and Evil in Fairy Tales. If you're unfamiliar with Marie-Louise von Franz, she was a student and contemporary and colleague of C.G. Jung's, and she carried on his work in a masterful way. And she does so much work with folk and fairy tales. And she, you know, has contributed mightily to that canon of knowledge. So I'm going to read just the story, and then I'll be recording parts 2 and 3 here very soon, because this is all on my mind right now and in my experience. So I'll post, you know, the next part 2, you know, fairly soon, probably sometime early next week. And then, you know, 3 shortly after that. So you won't have to wait long, and we'll revisit the story in each of the segments, so that you don't feel like, oh, I have to remember it all now. I just want you to let it initiate a conversation for now, okay? Vasilisa the Beautiful. There was once in a faraway kingdom a merchant and his wife. They had only one daughter, called Vasilisa the Beautiful. The word Vasilisa means queen, but it is just an ordinary name. When the girl was 8 years old, the merchant's wife called her and said she, her mother, had to die, but she would leave Vasilisa her maternal blessing and a doll. Vasilisa was to keep the doll with her always and never show it to anybody. If she was in trouble, she should ask it for advice. Having said this, the merchant's wife died. The merchant afterward married a widow with 2 children of about Vasilisa's age. The stepmother slowly turned hostile to Vasilisa, but the doll always comforted her. One day, the merchant had to leave the country for a long time. During his absence, the stepmother moved with her 3 daughters to another house standing near the primeval forest, in which, in a clearing, was the house of the Baba Yaga, the great Russian fairy tale witch. Nobody was ever allowed to approach her, and whoever fell into her hands was eaten like a chicken. The situation suited the stepmother because she hoped that Vasilisa would one day cross the Baba Yaga's path. One evening, the stepmother gave her 3 daughters candles, ordering them to embroider, to knit, and to spin. She left them and went to bed. In time, the candles burned down. One of the girls took her knitting needle to clear the wicks, but purposefully used it in such a manner that the light went out. Then she said she didn't mind because she could do her embroidery without light. And the other said she could knit without light. But you, the 2 girls said to Vasilisa, must go to the Baba Yaga and get fire so that we can have light again. And they pushed her out of the room. The girl went to her room and asked her doll what to do. The doll said not to be afraid, but to go where the other sent her and take the doll with her, and it would help her. Vasilisa walked all through the night. Then she met a rider dressed in white, sitting on a beautiful horse covered in white, and the moment he passed her, day broke. After a while, she met a 2nd rider dressed in red, riding a horse covered in red, and at that moment, the sun rose. Having walked through the night, Vasilisa then walked through the whole of the next day. In the evening, she arrived at the clearing where the Baba Yaga's house stood. Around the house was a fence made of human bones with posts made of skulls. The bolts on the doors were made of the arms of skeletons, and the locks were made of a skeleton's mouth from which the teeth stuck out. Vasilisa was terrified. She stood nearly fainting and as though nailed to the ground. when suddenly a black rider on a black horse galloped by, and it became night. But the darkness did not last long, for soon the eyes and all the skulls on the hedge began to glow, and the whole clearing was light as day. Vasilisa stood shivering with fear, but soon she heard an uncanny humming noise, and the trees began to rustle, and out of the wood came the Baba Yaga. She sat in a mortar and rode with a pestle, and with a broom she removed her traces. When she came to the door, she sniffed the air and said, "Ugh, it smells of Russians. Who's there?" Vasilisa went to meet her and bowed and said, "It's I, grandmother. My stepsisters have sent me to you to fetch fire."
"Good," answered the Baba Yaga. "I know them. Stay with me for a while, and then you shall have the fire."
Then she spoke some magic words. The door opened, and the Baba Yaga entered the courtyard, and the door shut behind them. She then ordered the girl about, telling her to bring her food and heat the stove. She ate a lot, leaving a little cabbage soup and a bread crust for Vasilisa, practically nothing. Then she lay down to sleep, but she told Vasilisa the next morning when she went out, Vasilisa was to sweep out the yard and the hut, cook the midday meal, do the washing, and then separate the mildewed from the good corn. All had to be finished by the time the Baba Yaga came home, otherwise she would eat her. The girl asked her doll for advice, and the doll told her not to be afraid, to eat her supper and say her prayers, and lie down to sleep. "Morning is wiser than evening," the doll said. Next morning, when Vasilisa woke up and looked out the window, the eyes and the skulls were already closing. The white rider rode by, and the day began. The Baba Yaga went off, and Vasilisa went over the whole house, admiring all its treasures. Then she wondered which piece of work she should begin on, but the work had all been done by the doll, who was just separating the last black from the white corn seeds. When the Baba Yaga came back in the evening, she found everything done and was very angry that there was nothing with which to find fault. Then something very strange happened, for she cried out, "My faithful servants, grind the corn for me." And three pairs of skeleton hands appeared and took the corn away. She gave Vasilisa her orders for the next day, saying she should do as she had done the day before, but in addition, she should clean the poppy seeds. The next evening, when the Baba Yaga came, she called up the hands again to press oil out of the poppy seeds. While the Baba Yaga ate her supper, Vasilisa stood silently by. The Baba Yaga said, "What are you staring at without saying a word? Are you dumb?" The girl answered, "If I may, I would like to ask you some questions."
"Ask then,"
said the Baba Yaga. "But remember, not all questions are good. To know too much makes one old." Vasilisa said, "I'd only like to ask you about the things I've seen. On the way to you, a rider dressed all in white passed me, sitting on a horse. Who was that?"
"That is my day, the bright one," answered Baba Yaga.
"And then another rider overtook me, dressed in red and sitting on a red horse. Who was he?"
"That is my son, the red one."
"And then at the gate, a black rider came.
That is my knight, the dark one."
And then Vasilisa thought of the three pairs of hands, but she didn't dare ask and kept silent. And the Baba Yaga said,
"Why don't you ask me some more questions?"
And the girl answered that those were enough, adding, "You said yourself, grandmother, that knowing too much will make you old." Then the Baba Yaga replied, "And this is important. You did well to ask only about what you saw outside and not about what you saw inside the hut. I don't like it when the dirt is brought outside the hut. But now I want to ask you something. How did you manage to do all the work I gave you?"
"The blessing of my mother helped me," answered Vasilisa. "She didn't mention the doll."
"Oh, that's it, is it? Then get away from here, blessed daughter. I don't need any blessing in my house." And the Baba Yaga pushed Vasilisa out of the hut and chased her out of the gate. Then she took one of the skulls with flaming eyes from the hedge and put it on a pole and gave it to Vasilisa, saying, "This is the fire for your stepsisters. Take it and carry it with you." Vasilisa hurried from the Baba Yaga and ran through the dark forest, lit by the light of the skull, which only went out when dawn broke. On the evening of the next day, she reached home. When she approached the gate, she thought of throwing away the skull, but a hollow voice said, "Don't throw me away. Take me to your stepmother." So Vasilisa obeyed, and when she brought the fire into the room, the glowing eyes of the skull stared unceasingly at the stepmother and her daughters, burning into their souls, and the eyes followed them wherever they went to hide. Toward morning, they were burnt to ashes, and only Vasilisa remained unhurt. In the morning, Vasilisa buried the skull in the earth, shut up the house, and went into town. So we will begin here next time. And the version that Clarissa Pinkola Estes uses has a few variations, and we'll note those so the story will be refreshed in your mind again. But immediately, if you have followed my podcast, I bet you're noticing some similarities, or if you're aware of folk and fairy tales, if that's something that you have spent time with. And immediately, this brings to mind, in my mind, the Iron John story of when he needed Iron John because he needed to go ride to fight for the king and the hand of the maiden that he loved. And Iron John appeared with a white horse and a red horse and a black horse. And of course, these are the colors of alchemy. These are the colors of alchemy. So these riders and the horses and the day and the night and the dawn breaking, you know, just sit with these ideas for a while. And wherever else, you know, just notice where your mind went, what captivating details, what questions you're having right now. And just be with that. Let this story start to come alive in your own psyche. And there are those magical hands. We will definitely touch on that. What is going on there? So we will pick up soon and dive in to interpretation and nuance and soul story within the frame of this folk tale. I wish you well in the days ahead, and until next time, take good care. Thank you. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.